Good evening, Atlantic Group. I'm so glad to be here. I was here once before, and it was such a great experience that when Heidi called me to ask me to come back, I said, yeah. It's a beautiful church. I have great admiration for the group and the way you guys operate. It reminds me of the old time sobriety, you know. Looking good when you come out here, you know, looking good when you celebrate. You know, my sponsor told me in the beginning that I couldn't carry the message looking like the devil, you know, and I always remember that. You know, I am an alcoholic, and my name is Carolyn. And an old friend of mine that I've had in the program just not very long ago said, Carolyn, why do you say I'm an alcoholic first and that your name is Carolyn? And I said, because the last drying out place that I was at, they told me I better remember what I was first and never mind what my name was. And I got in that habit. So I am an alcoholic first and foremost. It really doesn't matter what my name is, because if I forget who I am, I'm in trouble. I was born and brought up in Kentucky, and that's kind of foreign to New York. In fact, I notice sometimes these weathermen never tell you what the weather is in Kentucky. They just bypass it like it doesn't exist. You know, and I've been meaning to call somebody up and let them know that. But I didn't know that Kentucky didn't matter to New York, you know, when I was growing up. And I grew up in a very a strict Catholic home. And in those days, Catholicism in Kentucky was a rarity. You know, they didn't even bus me to school because I was Catholic. That my mother, if we were going to get a ride to school with my mother, she had to take us or we had to ride the city bus. And those were in the days where, you know, I was not supposed to really get involved with a Baptist, you know. My dad was very strict. When I was 10 days old, my dad and I were baptized together. He was baptized into Catholicism. And he took to Catholicism like we do when we come here and we're as desperate as the dying can be and we grab onto AA. And he was a very devout man. He was a very honest man. He practiced what he preached. And he made daggone sure that his kids did the same thing. And so I went to Catholic school, and you know, when I was a little girl, my dad used to do the USO thing. He played the guitar, and they used to stand me on a card table, and I would sing. And I would sing songs like, If You Let Me Be Your Little Sweetheart, I'll Be Much Obliged to You. And that's kind of the way that I grew up relating to men. If you'll let me be your little sweetheart, I'll be much obliged to you. And, you know, I look back on those times with a lot of nice memories. And we'd go down to the farm where my mom grew up, and on a Sunday afternoon, my dad played the guitar, my uncles would play the fiddle, and my grandpa would play the juice harp. And those were fun times. But, you know, life goes on, and you grow up. And I didn't pick up my first drink until I was about 18 years old. And the first drink that I had was a Pink Lady. And I was very much a lady at that time. And that was not the way I ended up. I loved the pretty glass. I loved the pretty drinks. And I had this romantic notion about drinking. And in the 50s, when I was doing some of this stuff, you know, we'd go to these supper clubs, and they'd have bands, and you'd order, you know, the nice dinner, and you'd dance. And I don't remember having a really big problem at that particular time. And then, you know, we'd go to the races and we'd get all gussied up and we'd wear our hats and the white gloves and I'd come home, you know, having had a few drinks and lay down and take a rest, do nothing else but get up, shower, although we didn't have a shower then. We only had a bathtub. And people laugh at me because I still want to wash my hair in the sink. And they say, why do you want to do that? And I said, because we didn't have a shower in our house till much later, you know. But anyway, you know, my Uncle Joe used to come to the house with a pint in his back pocket. This was my mother's. He was my great uncle, my mother's uncle. And every time Uncle Joe showed up, there was going to be a problem. Because my mother was going to get lit, and my dad was going to be upset. So that's how I started associating, you know, that my mother was going to get drunk or have too many drinks, and that would upset my dad, you know. But I was definitely predisposed to the disease of alcoholism. There was, you know, alcoholism on both sides of the family, even though my father probably wouldn't admit it if he was alive today. But he had brothers who had a problem, and I had uncles and an aunt, and my mother. She was not a daily drinker, but when she drank, you know, she could not probably guarantee her behavior. But I didn't drink alcoholically right away, and yet I have to tell you that when I did drink, that, you know, I would do things, silly things, like you know, pick a fight with my boyfriend over some girl he looked at, or, you know, and then it got a little more serious where if I didn't get my way, I would threaten to jump out of a moving car, you know, things like that. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, my life was a mess because my will was to drink and have my own way. And when this plane went down the other day in the Hudson River, I fondly remembered what this guy told me at one of the drying out places where I was. And I was having a real problem because I was hitting drying out places like they were, you know, going out of style. And this guy said to me, he said, Carolyn, he says, you know what your problem is? He said, if you were on a shipwreck and they offered you a white, whatever you call them, he'd say, oh, no, I don't want that one. I want the blue one, you know. The point is that no matter what anybody offered me, I was never satisfied. Life went on. I'd much rather have danced than drink. I left many a drink on the table because I really liked to boogie. And I still do. I mean, really. Music is, you know, just can change my mood, was my everything. I took piano lessons and I really excelled in the state contest, and I used to get superior all the time. And they told me I had a very bright future, and they had much potential. When I was in high school, a situation happened that shook my world. It shook my family up. The clergy was brought in, and there was much shame and guilt that I carried for many, many years. I drank to run away from it, only I didn't know that I was doing that. And along came this big spender from the east. This kind of swept me off my feet. I don't know what was wrong with me, except I had the disease of alcoholism. I was uninformed, incapable of making healthy decisions. I met this guy, and he was telling me how wonderful I was and what he could do for me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I started going out with him in January and April. I had an engagement ring on my finger. And in June, I was married. and I didn't know what had hit me. You know, the criteria that I picked him, he had a 1958 brand new Chevrolet Impala, and it was blue, just like his eyes, you know. And I mean, that's how much I knew about picking a life's partner, you know. And I mean, I really, I look back on that and I say, whoa, did you need your head examined? You know, because, and I didn't have to get married, you know. So we got married, and I had a really nice job with a big corporation with much potential. And I worked very hard and I liked it. And my husband loved that I had this great job. And I got pregnant right away. 9 months and 3 weeks after we were married, I had a little boy. And I look back on that now, and I was no more equipped to be a mom, no more equipped to be a wife than the man in the moon. And we didn't drink a lot. You know, there just wasn't much opportunity for us to drink a lot. But we moved to New York, and we got in with this rather wealthy crowd. And, you know, after Mass on Sunday, my husband wasn't Catholic, but after Mass on Sunday, we'd gang up and go to somebody's house and have whiskey sours. And, you know, I didn't realize right away that I was in the grips of a progressive illness. But I can tell you this, when my daughter was 11 months old, I got pregnant right away again. And when my daughter was 11 months old and I was sitting there feeding her, and this was after some physical abuse started, I realized that I had made a terrible mistake. And I believe that's where I crossed over that invisible line. You know, down deep inside, I was Catholic. My father was the pillar of the church. I was going to get disowned if I got a divorce. There was no way out for me, and the fear was tremendous. And so I kept hanging in there, okay? And we would go out and we'd drink, and I'd have somebody tell me, oh, Carolyn, you've got the greatest personality, and you dance so good. And it was because I'd had a couple of drinks. And so I figured, you know, that part in Bill's story, where that feeling of grandeur, you know, I identify a lot with that. I identified with the speakers tonight. And it's real important that I identify with the speakers, because if I'm not identifying and I'm comparing, then I'm in trouble. And I don't care how much time we have. But anyway, to make a long story short, I call AA this day, and I said, please send me some literature in an unmarked envelope, you know. And I got the envelope and opened it up, and I gave it a quick glance and shoved that thing in a drawer. I said, I'm not that bad, you know. And life went on. We drank a lot, in one of the ways that I was able to deny even more and you know, be okay about it, was that the whole crowd we hung out with drank just like I did. Just like I did. And my husband, I used to go get him and bring him home. You know, he had a problem too, although I was not too aware of it, because I was always worried about where I was going to get my drink. You know, this marriage went from bad to worse. And I decided to go to a parish priest for some counseling, because I wanted to save this marriage on account of the kids. And now, by this time, I'd had three. And this priest was very nice to me, and he was very good. And he said, you know, at the end of the 6 months, he said, Carolyn, he said, I can't guarantee you that this marriage is going to be saved. He said, in fact, he says, I would tell you to get out of it while you're still alive. You know, and I, of course, you know, if you don't have an open mind, you don't hear what's being said. And but he did say, no matter what happens, he says, I have to tell you that you have a drinking problem and you should go to AA. and the hair went up on the back of my head, and I had been seeing a psychiatrist because I was trying to pull it all together, you know. And I started having some physical problems. You know, I would go to the grocery store, and I would have these dry heaves. You know, then I ended up in the hospital with a stomach condition. I would be walking across the kitchen floor, and I would projectile vomit. And this was all of me being scared to death, and also, you know, that guilt and that shame that we can have. I don't want to bore you with all the details of this very sick marriage, but in 1972, after the priest and a medical doctor and a psychiatrist told me that I should get out of this situation because it was not very healthy for me, I couldn't get sober. I would go to AA, and the only thing I can tell you is one night I was walking out the door to go to an AA meeting, and I had had Swiss steak for dinner that night, and my husband just got up from the table, and he says, "You're not going anywhere," and he poured the Swiss steak all over me, and I had a brand new white leather coat, and poor me, poor me. For me, and that would make me, you know, every time something happened like that, that would give me a reason to drink. Every time I would get knocked around, it would give me a reason to drink. Okay, so to make a long story short, I had to leave, and I left the three children with my husband because it was important in my mind, in my sick mind, that these three children stay together. And I would love to say that I got sober right after that, but I was unprotected now. And when I say unprotected, when you live in a house, no matter how unhealthy it is, it somehow protects you from the outside world. And many things started to happen. You know, I the drying out places did not stop. They increased. And I got picked up for drunken driving, and I ended up in jail. And I was dressed to the nines. And I was giving them a hard time, and I dried out at this one place, and I had to find a caretaker because I had nobody to take care of me. I so identified with Adam and Tanya because of the trouble that they had. But to make a long, 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 long story short, with the same old stuff, you know, like I'd pick up that first drink, and I'd get drunk. I ended up in AA, and I came in the back door, and I said, "Oh, am I in the right place?" And they assured me that I was, and the first time that they had me speak, I said something like, "My name is Alcoholic, and I am a Carolyn," or, you know, and I was no more with the program than the man in the moon, but in those days, you know, we are so lucky here because we have so many meetings, so many step meetings, so many big book meetings. We've got, we've got so much going on as far as program goes. And that wasn't always the case back in the early 70s, especially up in Dutchess County where I lived, you know. And but I came to the end of the road, and you know, I noticed something in the big book today because I do read it very frequently. Until we let go of our old ideas, the results are nil. Until we let go, absolutely. And I have to honestly tell you that when I let go, absolutely, when I was in my last drying out place, and I woke up and I came to, actually, and I asked God to please help me. And that was June the 11th, 1974. And from that point on, I have gotten everything I needed to stay sober. I got a sponsor. I got a group. And I had a sponsor who would not listen to me, wouldn't listen to about this man that knocked me around the block. That's just too bad, she'd say. Don't drink and go to meetings. Call me every morning. Ask God for help to keep you sober. Thank him at night. And read the 24-hour book. And I called her every day. This big corporation that I had worked for, I got back with some manipulation and getting my own way. And I had picked up a drink and my landlady now, at this point, my kids are with my husband, I'm out on my own, which is dangerous. They came this one day, and the head of personnel walked in, and there I was in this rainbow-colored turtleneck pantyhose, and my hair was clear down to here, and I was skinny as a rail. And she looked at me, and she says, "You're fired." And I just looked up at her in a drunken state, and I said, "You're an equal opportunity employer. You're going to hear from my lawyer." You know, and I mean, you know, the gall of me. And I had this really nice boss that I had called, and he said, "Stop." He said, "If you're an alcoholic," I finally got honest. And he said, "If you're an alcoholic," he said, "stay there, get well. I'll stop your dismissal papers." And that's another instance of God leaving me what I needed. You know, I was not very happy about being an alcoholic, and I was not very happy about having to come to AA, even in the state that I was in. And I had this woman who loved me unconditionally. You know, she got me involved with the solution of the program, which are the steps, you know. And for me to concede to my innermost self that I had this disease was the biggest thing that I've ever done in my life, okay? And for me to make a decision to turn my life and my will over to something, I turned my life and my will over to her because I was so scared that I was going to make an unhealthy decision and I would drink again. And at the end of my first year, over the Memorial holiday, I had... You know, my sponsor was very big on the physical part of the disease. You had to eat. You had to, you know, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. She used to pound that in my head. And so she had me go for a physical, and one of my tests didn't come back real good. And so, in fact, it was cancer, and after my first year, I had to have major surgery. And the only thing I was worried about was staying sober, that I wouldn't get hooked on any pills. And my sponsor was with me all the way. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in this room, what I heard from Barack Obama today was practicing principles, you know, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and let's get going again. Okay? And how many times have all of us done that? And I've done it over and over and over again in AA. Because even though I haven't had a drink in almost 35 years, 34 and something, I still have a lot of work to do on myself. I honestly believe that this disease takes constant vigilance. And I don't mean that in I'm talking about my experience. I can't forget where I came from. Or I have to be aware that I still have character defects, that I have to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. You know, that self-centered fear that we all can get, that I have, you know, and that you know, coming here tonight, I told Max when he picked me up, thank Max so much for he's just such a gentleman, and I'm so grateful that he's in my life, and we're in the same group, and I got to tell you this. Last year, I was diagnosed with lung cancer at the end of November. And so when Max found out, I said, "Max, I'm not going to die. You can't have that first slot in June, you know, because we share the same month." And he's always kidding me. "I want to be first in June, you know." And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not going anywhere. And I want to tell you the love and support that I have received from not only Max, but every member of the group and AA in general, through that sickness, through many sad times, you know. I had a significant other that that I loved dearly that passed away, and about, you know, 4 years ago, and my mother passed away 3 months. And you know, I never thought that my life would be manageable again. I never thought that I would be able to make amends to my children. You know, the harm that was done to them, they didn't have a fair shot. And Max and I were talking about one of my sons on the way down here. I have one son who does not talk to me. You know, he... And I've come to believe, too, that you can't have an effective relationship with somebody who has the attitudes of the disease of alcoholism or is active in their drinking. And that has been the case somewhat with my children. But this program has given me the ability to be okay with me, okay? To have peace of mind. Peace of mind that money can't buy. You know, and when I do my prayers and meditation, which I do every day, and does that mean I work a perfect program? Absolutely not. But I do know that love and service keep me out of myself. The only problem I've got is the bondage of self. If I'm not thinking about myself, that's a great day. You know, and I love, I have some young women or women, some of them aren't so young anymore, that, you know, and I'm the old lady of the group, you know, and that's okay. But to be able to give away, and my sponsor used to tell me, your experience is going to become your greatest asset, and I wanted to smack her. Because what woman does what, you know, in the 70s, when I was divorced and I lost my children and had to give up the custody to my husband, that was a terrible thing. I mean, that was a shameful thing, you know, and I was able to help other, I have been able to help some other women that have had similar things like that happen. You know what I believe that probably my life is not a whole lot of my business. God kind of just scoots me along, okay? I think there's a power in this room tonight with all of us. I think God is within each and every one of us. And that if I am, remember where I came from and I'm grateful for what I have, I want to carry it. I want to carry it out. I want to give it away. And that's why I was so impressed today, because I really thought Barack Obama was talking our talk, you know? And if he walks our walk, you know, he was talking principles and the we of us and the we of the program. None of us would be able to do any of this if it wasn't for the power greater than ourselves, the we of us all. You know, we'd never be able to do it by ourselves or stay sober by ourselves. We have a great group in Westchester. You all should come up and visit us. In fact, Vince has, and Eddie has, and Heidi has. And I would like to thank Heidi for asking me tonight, giving me the honor to be able to share my experience, strength and hope with everybody, because this program has given me life. You know, I came in here having no hope at all, and I was given, have been given, each day. You know, when the count was going on, I wanted to get up here and say, you know, I got one day today because I didn't have to drink today. You know, I didn't even think about drinking today. I thought about coming down here to this wonderful group. And it's so warm, and you all are so welcoming. And I'm just very grateful to be here and glad to be sober. And it's only by the grace of God because, you know, if I'd been left to my own devices, I would not be here today. I did anything and everything to do myself in, and I was not allowed to do that. You know, that's why I know someone, a power greater than me, was watching over me. And I didn't realize that right away. And when my sponsor told me about a spiritual awakening, a spiritual awakening. And now the way I've got it kind of in my head is, my mother said to me, you know, you can't be a beacon if your light don't shine. And it's true. And the way our light shines is because we keep maintaining our spiritual awakening by working the steps. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I walk in my group and I see those people, everybody in my group, I just feel differently. You know, I can be in the bondage of self that day and walk in, and it goes just like that. Thank you all for listening.